So self-reliance is the topic of discussion, as already announced. Let's begin by seeing the meaning of the word self-reliance, what the dictionary says. Dictionary defines it as capacity to rely on one's own capabilities and to manage one's own affairs. It is independence. And synonyms of this word is autonomy, self-direction, self-sufficiency. And the word reliance here means dependency or dependence, confidence in something, trust in the thing on which reliance is placed. This is what the dictionary defines, the word reliance and self-reliance. Now, if we look at ourselves, all our days are filled with various activities that we have to perform, various duties that are there to be performed, various obligations that are there to be fulfilled. So it is filled with activity all day. If we look back and ask ourselves, what is it that motivates us to act? What is the aim of our action? The motive and the aim of our action, the motive and aim of any effort that we undertake, even the tiniest action that we do, even what we think or what we speak, what is it that motivates us? Then, vaguely, most of us would describe that it is because we want to find happiness, or I want to be happy, so I do such and such a thing. So I go for work, so I do all these things so that I can be happy. If you try to break down this thing which we term as happiness itself, there are various specific meanings that each of us give for what we mean by happiness. For some, it is religious piety. Being religious and trying to follow one's own religion and the precepts of one's religion is happiness. For others, it is family duties and the pleasures of the family. And then there is acquirement of money, acquirement of wealth, acquirement of physical comforts. Or there is fame, social status, the desire to be looked upon as something, as somebody who is famous and powerful. So these are all various centers upon which we try to place our happiness. We invest our time and energy in trying to secure happiness by fulfilling these things. Now let's dwell upon this tendency of ours and try to understand it in the context of our subject. If we look at any external event, any circumstance, and ask ourselves the question, is it unchanging? Any event or occurrence that happens in one's life, does that situation or that circumstance remain like that forever? We can never find any such event which would remain in a constant state forever. It is something, it changes into something else. It is never constant. And if we ask ourselves, even by looking back at our own experience, were we able to hold on to something which we thought as the source of our happiness? It may be an event, it may be a thing, or it may be a person. Were we able to hold on to it? Were we able to grasp it and say, now this is mine? Now I have held on to it. Now I have grasped it. Now it is in my hand. We will also never find any such circumstance which would remain constant and which we were able to grasp and hold on to it and say, now this belongs to us. Not only that, we will find, if we are careful in analyzing our experiences, that there are a lot of uncertainties in trying to reach an object which we feel will give happiness to us. Lot of uncertainties in the very path of reaching that thing which we feel will give us happiness. There are a lot of uncertainties. And even after reaching something, there are a lot of anxiety. Anxiety of losing it. Anxiety of it changing it to something else. The fear of losing it. So all such things crowd together. And as Buddha says, only pain and sorrows remain forever. But pleasures and happiness is something like a bird which sits on a branch and alights and flies away. It's only momentary. But underlying current of anxiety and pain always remains. And this is general experience. All of us would have gone through it if we look back and see. So this incessant change that is happening within oneself and outside of oneself should be noticed. As the Buddha says, it is like the flowing river of Ganga. Never for a moment is it the same. Our life and the circumstances of life is like the river of Ganga, Ganga river, constantly changing. And if we look at social status or fame, which we may try to achieve, which some feel is a thing to be aspired to, an ambitious thing to be reached, then it is a most unsubstantial. Because common experience shows that one who always tries to please another and tries to put his happiness in others' consent and others' opinion about himself will always be unhappy. And what about wealth? Wealth is again a false security, a pseudo security. Something that is full of anxiety, full of fear, becomes a liability. Asset, what we call as asset, becomes a liability. As Shankaracharya says, artham anartham bhavaya nityam nasti tata sukalesha satyam. Not even the tiniest of happiness is there. Don't think that will give you happiness. And your own son will become your enemy for the sake of wealth. So this is the way of the world, he says. So wealth, pleasures, social achievements, fame, all these things turn out to be something other than what we imagine it to be. And then further, Shankara says, don't pride yourself because now you have dana, jana, and youth. Don't think you have power now and you will retain this power forever. Don't think you have, since you have money now, you will retain it forever. Or don't think you have the support of the people and social status and fame. Don't think it's going to be with you forever. Within a snap of the finger, within a moment's time, it will overturn and it will topple you down. మాకురు ధన జన యౌవన గర్వం హరతి నిమేష కాలసర్వం విత్ ఇన్ ఎ మోమెంట్స్ టైమ్ ఇట్ విల్ ఆల్ బి గాన్ అండ్ మెనీ ఆఫ్ అస్ నో పురంధరదాసాస్ కీర్తనే విచ్ స్పీక్స్ అబౌట్ దిస్ వెరీ సేమ్ థింగ్ వేర్ హీ సేస్ హూ డూ యూ థింక్ ఈజ్ యువర్ వెల్ విషర్ యూ థింక్ యువర్ వైఫ్ ఈజ్ యువర్ వెల్ విషర్ యూ థింక్ ద వెల్త్ దట్ యూ హ్యావ్ క్రియేటెడ్ ఈజ్ యువర్ వెల్ విషర్ యూ థింక్ దట్స్ గోయింగ్ టు హెల్ప్ యూ ఆర్ డూ యూ థింక్ ద ల్యాండ్ దట్ యూ హ్యావ్ అక్వైర్డ్ దట్ రియల్ ఎస్టేట్ డూ యూ థింక్ దట్ ఈస్ అ రియల్ సెక్యూరిటీ అండ్ దెన్ హీ అనలైజెస్ ఈచ్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ త్రీ థింగ్స్ అండ్ షోస్ హౌ ఇట్ ఈస్ సో అన్సబ్స్టాన్షియల్ అండ్ వీ పుట్ అవర్ హోప్ అండ్ అవర్ సెన్స్ ఆఫ్ సెక్యూరిటీ ఇన్ ఇట్ అండ్ దెన్ వీఆర్ డెల్యూడెడ్ So the basic point here is that it is all unsubstantial and this doesn't need the only thing that it needs for us to understand this is to look back at our own experience we'll find that it is unsubstantial we'll find that it is changing so the question will be how will we find permanence and peace in something which is inherently changing how will we find permanence in and peace in something which is inherently unsubstantial inherently unsubstantial and filled with pain so we try to find permanence and peace but both we will not find which is why in the Bhagavad-gita in one of the chapters krishna says krupana palahetva which means miserable and unhappy are those whose impulse to action is found in its reward if you are impelled to act because we'll get something out of it then we'll be miserable and unhappy he says so a wise thing would be what Nachiketas did when he was offered all the wealth and riches by Yama. As the Upanishadic story goes, Nachiketas is given three wishes. One of the wish is to know about death itself and what survives after death. And Yama doesn't want to answer it. So he, instead of it, he offers Nachiketas all the wealth, all the riches that is possible for a man to get and how many ever years that he wants to live he can wish to live without being touched by death but Nachiketas is one who had already acquired this discriminative power of knowing what is real and what is unreal what is substantial and what changes So, we have studied that and we find how Nachiketas rejects all these things by showing that all these things are within the framework of death. How many ever years or decades and centuries the pleasures may be, it will still have an end. Still have an end. So here what we must understand is that what binds us to all these externalities what is it that binds us what binds us is our desires our mind which is directed by desires look at what Manu says he is very clear on what binds a man and what is the cause of liberation he says mind alone is the cause for the bondage and the liberation of men mind alone is the cause of bondage and liberation of men attachment to objects of sense through the mind makes for bondage while withdrawal from them leads to liberation so where we direct our minds where we put our mind where is our attention diverted to what is it that inspires us what is it that is attracting us in life we should analyze that. And he says, this, if it is towards objects of senses, then that is bondage. That is what your mind is, what is binding you, nothing else. And when the mind is completely withdrawn from the objects of senses, that is liberation. Bandhaya vishayasaktam, he says. Objects of the senses, that is what binds us. And when mind is directed to us, that is what binds us. So, when we are attracted to something, we put our hope and expectation on it. Whether it may be a thing or a person or an event, we put our expectation on it. And we expect it to remain constant. We have derived some pleasure out of a circumstance or a person or a thing, and we want that pleasure to be there forever. We want people to treat us well always, to be good to us always, and we want events to give happiness forever. But as we have already discussed at length, it changes and it passes on and becomes something else. And then the mind, which has already placed on that thing, has to withdraw itself, because that has changed and gone. That withdrawal is the pain that we feel, that disappointment, that disillusionment. So as Krishna says in one of the chapters, let me read that. All creatures act according to their natures. What then will restrain effect? This is from chapter 3. All creatures act according to their natures. What then will restrain effect? In every purpose of the senses are fixed affection and dislike, raga and dvesha, affection and dislike. A wise man should not fall in the power of these two passions, for they are the enemies of man. They are the enemies of man. It's not, our enemies are not outside us. First enemies are within us, this liking and disliking, raga and dvesha. This is what he says in chapter 3. And one of our friend was the other day recounting a story from Mahabharata, wherein Pandavas visit a particular place which is so full of light, so full of peace, and so calm and so beautiful. And then Vyasa comes and says, don't get attached to it. It is very beautiful, very attractive, very very charming, but then don't get attached to it, because even that will pass away, even that will change and pass away. So this outgoing tendency of the mind has to be checked. The tendency of the mind to be modified by external events or by internal passions and emotions, that is what has to be checked. And this is yoga. This is yoga. Yoga is not physical exercise. Yoga is not breathing techniques. But this checking the tendency of the mind through knowledge, the knowledge which realizes that we are greater than the mind, and what is our powers? Why do we have this mind and the body? Through that knowledge, checking the tendencies and the modifications of the mind is yoga. Let's see what Buddha says in the chapter on the path. You know, there are many teachers who claim to show the path to the public, but let's read what Buddha says in Dhammapada on the chapter on the path. He says, impermanent are all conditioned beings. He who knows this ceases to be in the thrall of grief. This is the path of purity. This knowledge about what is unreal and what is real, what is impermanent and what is permanent, this stops us from being in the thrall of grief. As Krishna said in the reading that we had, this disconnection from pain, meditation which is disconnection from pain. And further he says, full of pain are all conditioned beings. He who knows this ceases to be in the thrall of grief. This is the path of purity. Unsubstantial are all conditioned beings. He who knows this ceases to be in the thrall of grief. This is the path of purity. So impermanence, full of pain and unsubstantial. So it is it is dukkha, as Buddha calls it. It produces dukkha. Conditioned existence produces dukkha. And it is this constant bombarding of pain which arouses the soul, which arouses our inquiring mind and makes us ask questions as to why there is pain. Why is there so much pain around us? And as the very first verse of the Sankhya Karika says, then he becomes a jignasu. When the three kinds of pain bombard him, the first tendency is to seek answers outside. Oh, that person caused me pain. This thing caused me pain. Now I'll have to change that thing. I'll have to change this. I'll have to have insurance. I'll have to have such and such a secure measures to guard myself from pain. So this is the first tendency, and he speaks of it. But he says all such external measures, including all the religious and astrological rituals that we try to escape from pain and disaster and suffering, he says all such things is, one, you are not sure whether it will bring you happiness or it will solve your problem, and another, if it solves the problem, it is still impermanent, it will not permanently solve your problem. So he says acquire knowledge. Acquiring knowledge is the only way, he says, to permanently end pain. Which is again what Buddha said, that the path has to be tread, in order the noble eightfold path has to be tread in order to eliminate sorrow and suffering. So if we look at it, the primary nature of oneself, one fundamental characteristic of our mind and our soul is to be free. Freedom is the primary nature of a spiritual being. And we all being spiritual beings, our basic nature is to be free, is to be unbound, is to be unrestrained. There is a beautiful article in today's Deccan Herald in the Sunday supplement which speaks about this unconquerable human spirit which surpasses all seemingly unsurpassable obstacles and asserts its freedom, asserts its choice. Where does it come from? It comes from our basic nature to be free from conditions, to be free from all limitations. So life is teaching us this lesson. Nature itself is teaching us this lesson, that reliance on any external thing is going to bring you to sorrow, because it is unwisdom. Nature is kind enough to not let our unwise plans fructify, and it will deceive us in that sense, because that way it is teaching the soul that this is not the way that you will have to, this is not the way that you will have to live. This is not what you will have to do. This is not your duty. And let's look at our ability to learn anything, learn any new skill. For us to learn anything at all, first of all, we must have that potentiality to learn. That, for example, a child in order to stand up and walk, it must have that potentiality to learn to walk and then make the effort to walk. And our driving skills, we must have that ability and potentiality to learn how to balance the vehicle itself. And then we practice, and then from potentiality to actuality, it becomes. The driving skills become actual. It is there potentially within us when we are still learning. And then through practice and through learning, it becomes actual. It becomes a part of us. And another example is the difference between potentiality and actuality being the difference between a seed and a tree. Now the seed, if it is just there, open in the sunlight, it is just potential. It's just there. But once it goes into deep into the soil where there is no sunlight, and then struggles, and then comes out of it, acquires strength and power so that it is able to withstand all the surrounding hostile environment, and then opens itself to the sun, and then processes the energy of the sun, and then gives out fruit and seed for the future plant. So there is that struggle that is there, wherein it is deeply immersed, the seed is deeply immersed into the soil, and then emerges through its own effort, through gathering strength and power. Just like that is the state of the man. Man also is in a similar state. He is potentially divine. He is potentially free. Because he comes from one spirit, all beings arises like different sparks arising from a fire, from one spiritual unity. And after having come in touch with, after having arisen from spirit, it goes deep into matter. And then it has to struggle through all these delusions. And it is only through this struggle and this acquirement of power and strength that discrimination is attained. It is through making these choices, right or wrong, and getting the reaction of it, retributive and just reaction of its own choices, facing those reactions, facing those consequences, working through them, that strength is achieved. That growth is possible, that progress is possible. So all of us invariably are along this path of progress, along this pilgrimage of life, sacred pilgrimage of life. Whether it's any criminal or any person of any kind of character, whether a sage or a common person, a politician, whoever it may be, whatever may be his character that we may see in him, we all are in this same pilgrimage of life, in the same struggle. And it is because of this fact that we are all spiritual beings. We are all of a non-material nature. We are not of this earth. It is because of this fact that there will always be discontent in us among material things. Imagine yourself in the most comfortable material comforts that is possible. Imagine yourself to be in the middle of the most comfortable thing, everything taken care of, all the luxuries that you want is there at your hand. Even then, there will be a certain kind of discontent in man. The discontent is because the needs of our soul cannot be met on material planes. Our fundamental nature is of a different kind than material. Which is why how much ever we may seek outside through the tendency what the Upanishads call as the Pravritti Marga, how much ever we may go outside of ourselves and try to grasp, we will not be able to hold on to it, and it will not satisfy us. Because we don't belong to this place. we are not of this nature, we are not of this world. In the Bible, there is the story of the prodigal son. That is, he is a prince. He wanders away from his father's kingdom. He loses his way. And then he finally reaches a place, a pigsty, and lives among the pigs. He behaves like a pig. He eats the food of the pig. He sleeps with the pigs. And then one day he realizes that this is not my actual state. This is not where I was supposed to be. This is not of my nature. My father is a king. And then he starts his journey back in search of the kingdom of his father. And then after long search and effort, he reaches his father's kingdom and rightfully claims his kingdom and becomes a king. This is a journey of the soul. After having emerged from a spiritual plane and being of a spiritual nature, being ourselves prince, we get into matter and then get deluded by it. We wander away from our real nature and get deluded by what is unreal, what is unsubstantial. Permanence being ourselves, we seek for permanence outside of ourselves, in things which are inherently impermanent. And then nature teaches us this lesson constantly, which is what is Maya, illusion, that this is not real, this is not going to subsist forever. And if you want reality, then seek within yourself. There is a Latin saying which is quoted by Emerson in his article on self-reliance. He begins the article with that Latin saying which says, do not seek outside yourself. Do not seek outside yourself. So, all the three gunas and all the various confusion that arises is there because to teach us this lesson. Let's see what sage Patanjali says about this. What does he say? He says the universe, this universe, including the visible and the invisible, the essential nature of which is compounded of purity, action and rest, and which consists of the elements and the organs of action, exists for the sake of the soul's experience and emancipation. So this whole universe is working to bring out the purpose of each one of us, which is the same purpose, because we are all fundamentally one, reflections of one, radiations of one. And further he says, for the sake of the soul alone, the universe exists. And the commentator adds, nature in energizing does not do so with a view of any purpose of her own, but with the design, as it were, expressed in the words, let me bring about the soul's experience. All the experiences of life that we are facing is not meaningless. It's a sacred pilgrimage that we are going through, wherein each moment is a lesson which is teaching us these lessons. To know our own true nature, that is the whole crux of it. We are here, true beings, in the untrue atmosphere, to realize that we are none of these impermanent things. So one of the misunderstandings that is prevalent among us is that a teacher or a guru will liberate us. We just have to submit ourselves and a teacher will lift us from the muck that we have put ourselves into and grant us liberation. is a fundamentally mistaken notion which even a preliminary study of the teachings which is given out by the sages themselves will show how mistaken we are to think this way. What does Buddha say about this? He says, Buddhas are but signposts. Buddhas are but signposts. He says in the same chapter on the path, you yourself must try. Buddhas are but signposts. Those who enter the path and discipline themselves are released from the bondage of Mara. So he doesn't say, I will liberate you. No true teacher says that. If somebody says that, be careful that there is something that is not right there. You yourself must try. Buddhas are but signposts. And even in the Upanishads, we find many instances where when the disciple approaches the teacher, he has the adhikara to approach. And he comes with fuel in his hands. What is this fuel in his hands? The fuel is, he has done the preliminary preparation that is necessary, without which, let us be assured that neither will the guru be visible to the disciple, nor will the disciple be visible to the purview of the guru. Only when the preliminary preparation and the qualifications have been acquired, only when the required characteristics and the character is developed, then within oneself the true teacher shows himself. Let's not seek outside. That seeking outside tendency, he will save me, she will save me, that temple will save me, this church will save me, all that is delusions. So when we speak of reliance on self, self-reliance, what is meant by this self? What is this self that we refer to? This self is our true nature. The self is not the body as we think or our mental faculties, but a true nature, our primary fundamental nature, which is spiritual, the divine part in us. And when Krishna says in the 10th chapter that I am the ego seated in the hearts of all beings, Ahamatma Gudakesha, he means that he is this self. Krishna doesn't represent, Krishna when he speaks, he doesn't mean him as a person, but he means this spiritual spark that is within us, whose voice we hear as the voice of conscience. So Krishna represents that, and the Gita has to be read in this light. As when he says Krishna, whenever he refers to as I, he refers to that, that part, that spiritual portion which is there in each one of us, which doesn't need any intermediary, which doesn't need any outside priest. It is the birthright of every soul to be in communion with its source. So it doesn't need any outside priest to grant this, or priest to be an intermediator between one's own divine self. So it is this self that is referred to when we speak of self-reliance. And this self is what Patanjali calls as Ishvara. He describes Ishvara this way. Ishvara is a spirit untouched by troubles, works, fruits of works, or desires. So there is something within us which is beyond desires. If we are struggling to overcome our desires, if we are struggling to overcome this delusion that we have created around us, let us remember that there is something within us which is untouched by all these things. And we should rely on that. Which is what even Krishna proposes to Arjuna and all true students. He says in the 3rd chapter, all actions performed other than as sacrifice unto the God make the actor bound by action. Any action that we perform for our, which contains as its motive our self-interest, binds us down. Abandon then, O son of Kunti, all selfish motives, and in action perform thy duty for him alone, him being that spark of divinity that is within us. And another point is, with respect to the subject, that ourself, which we have been speaking of, and the law is one and the same. All the circumstances of life that we face, whether it may be happy, it may be full of disaster, it may be indifferent, whatever the nature of the things that comes to us, the primary source of it, the primary cause of it is oneself. A harm may seem to come from another person, but if we have knowledge and understand the workings of nature, we find that we are the cause of that harm. The harm that is coming from outside person, that person is only an agent through which the wrong that we have done, or the action we have done through based on ignorance, is fructifying and bringing us the result. And this is what Jesus meant when he said, the hand that smites us is our own hand. The hand that smites us is our own hand. The other person may be apparently harming us, but that very, why are we in that very situation, is because we have sown such seeds in the long past, which is fructifying and which is bearing fruit. So let us assume complete responsibility of any situation, any disaster that happens to us in our life, as well as any happy outcome. So there is a great responsibility for each of us, because each moment, by our thought, which is the most powerful thing, by our thoughts, we are thoughts and feelings, we are sowing these seeds which we will have to reap and eat its fruit one day in the future. So great responsibility lies in man for the progress of himself and all other beings, because he is connected with all. The self is one. So as a corollary, it means that our progress further, true progress, is possible only through working through the circumstances of life in which we are placed. Whatever may be that circumstance, whatever may be the station of life in which we are, that is the best for us. The law, which was referred to, is an intelligent law, is one with ourself. And what is necessary for the soul to progress, it is there, right in front of us, in our family duties, in our duties as an employee, in our duties as a citizen, in the various roles that we have to play in the life, there lies our liberation. It is working through them. It is by performing all these duties as a sacrifice to that self, and by not placing our reliance on external illusionary objects, it is through this that the progress is possible. We are in the perfect place. If you want spiritual progress, please don't go to any mathas or any Himalayas or anywhere. You are there, right where you are, there is your progress, by working along those lines with knowledge. Acquirement of knowledge and practice of it as virtues is the path. So after long ages of this practice of right performance of action, which is of course preceded by we understanding our true nature and telling, as Arjuna said in the last chapter of the Gita, Karishye Vachanam Tava, which means I will do thy bidding. I will not act according to my whims and fancies, but I will act according to the direction that is provided by the self within. What is right to that self, I will do it. That kind of devotion arising from knowledge. When that is done, then as elsewhere Krishna says, then the self shines through us. There is knowledge. We know what binds us, what liberates us, what is the cause of the misery of us and of the humanity in general, and what is the solution to it. And as Krishna says, wherever he is, there is security and happiness. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. Where the self shines, there is security, there is fortune, true fortune. This is what even Jesus said when he said, take no thought for morrow, what you shall eat and wherewithal you shall be clothed. Seek you first the kingdom of heaven, everything else will be added unto it. So, when the eye is one, we are full of light. When our focus, attention is upon what is real and doing our duties to that, which is of course oneself, which is oneself and also the self of all, and living our life according to it, that is reliance on self, not reliance on any earthly and passional or emotional subject or object, but reliance on what is true, reliance on self. And when we do that, everything that happens to us will happen aright. It may be a disaster for us as Mr. So and So. For the name and form, it may be a disaster, but the true self is guiding you through that experience, because it is through working through those experiences that progress is possible. You may be put in a situation which is most irritating, most annoying, most troublesome for us. But if we understand and try to acquire this knowledge and look at life and ourselves in that light, then everything works aright. Everything brings about the purpose of the soul, as Patanjali says, the whole nature work towards bringing out the experience and therefore the emancipation of the soul. It is through experience that emancipation is possible. So as the Hindu saying goes, dharmo rakshati rakshita, when he becomes in line with dharma, the law, the stern law, then dharma will protect him and bring about whatever progress that is necessary for that soul to, whatever progress that is necessary for the soul. So let's close here by remembering that self-reliance is reliance on one's own unchanging self, which is the self of all beings, and working through this apparent maze of life with that knowledge, with that understanding, and the performance of all the duties of life without leaving anything out, as sacrifice to oneself, sacrifice to one's own divine self. And as Chandogya Upanishad says, Tarati Shokam Atmavit, the one who is a knower of the self will surpass and transcend all kinds of sorrows.